Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, Diarmaid. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? How was your weekend? Sam Maguire has returned to Kildare. Yay! It's big news if you're a Lily White, if you're from Kildare. I'll give you a bit of history here, because it is history. It's not sport. The Sam Maguire was introduced, as in the Sam Maguire Cup, was introduced in 1928. And Kildare won it that year, which was big news back then. And it was, I think it was the fourth time we'd won it. And you know, we beat Kerry in 1905, Galway in 1919. We beat Kerry again in 1927. And then in 1928, we beat Cavan in the All-Ireland football final. And we were awarded the Sam Maguire Cup, which was new. And the captain of the Kildare team, who played for the Round Towers in Kildare Town, Willie Gannon, was called to the grandstand and was presented by Dr. McCartan, a close friend of the late Sam Maguire, with the beautiful silver cup, which commemorates the memory of that great Gael and true Irishman, Sam Maguire. And yesterday, descendants of Willie Gannon, his son and his granddaughter, were there in the square in Kildare to unveil a statue of Willie Gannon holding the Sam Maguire Cup. And you were saying, but that's not the real Sam Maguire Cup. No, but the real one was there as well. Marty Morrissey had it in his hands on the 6 o'clock news there in the square in Kildare. We got so close to getting it in 1998, but Galway deprived us of it. But it's there forever and ever, the Sam Maguire, albeit as part of a statue. Mark Richards is the man who did it. It looks great. It looks great. It's there. Now, you don't have any reason to pass through Kildare anymore because it's bypassed, but it's worth to stop in there because there's loads to see. Lovely little restaurants and shops and St. Bridget's Cathedral and the Round Tower, and then there's Kildare Village and Japanese Gardens, the Irish National Stud. I've not even been paid by Kildare Tourism, but I'll go on. And now you have the statue of the late Willie Gannon and the Sam Maguire Cup. And it's there, what was the name? Graham's Bakery. It used to be Graham's Bakery when I was a kid. And you go in there, and Graham's Bakery is owned by sisters, the Graham sisters. And the smell, oh wow, of fresh baking. And their chocolate eclairs were to die for. And you could barely see over the counter. And you might have got troppings for something. And you go in there and you buy yourself a chocolate eclair of an afternoon. And oh, yeah. And my granddad's shop was just around the corner from there. And he sold toys and fixed clocks and sold milk. And who was down for that? I can't remember. But anyway, there it is there. And it's worth a visit. And you get your picture taken with Sam Maguire. So big news for County Kildare. The Sam Maguire returns. We'll have to hold on to that. And history, because I told you that before, didn't I? I was in a pub once and this guy came up to me. He says, I was watching Blackboard Jungle the other day. Yeah, I have a bone to pick with you. He says, you asked when did Kildare win the Sam Maguire. It was in the sports section. That's a history question, Ray. It was 1928 there. Now, Ray at RTE.ie, we got a couple of emails in over the weekend. Good afternoon. I just thought I'd let you know, says Anya, about my little back garden activities. I live in a semi-detached house in the country and I've had a hedgehog coming at night in winter for a couple of years. This year she has arrived early. I wonder why. It's usually about November when I see the first sighting. What a surprise I got on Saturday night when I looked out and saw the usual hedgehog, and then I saw five more smaller ones scuttling around the garden. Is that what hedgehogs do? Scuttle. The family must have moved in. I seemingly have the perfect habitat for them. Plenty of shrubbery and partially wild garden, says Anya. Isn't that lovely? And I wonder, is the climate or the weather conditions different this year, or is it because your little hedgehog visitor has a family? Whatever it is, it's great to see them back, I would imagine. And on things, shrubbery and all that sort of thing, we'd own Dalton in a few weeks ago. He's a great new book out, which I'll get the name of. But he has rewilded a section of the Berry Peninsula. And he's a very interesting man. Anyway, he was talking to us about, and I'd read the book, and all about native species and invasive species. And then yesterday I was up in the Dublin Mountains, up at Tignock. And they have little information boards around the place, what we're doing to Tignock. And it's as if Owen Dalton wrote it. They are rewilding Tignock. They are taking out a lot of the trees that are not native to the area to encourage native fauna to return, birds and all that sort of thing. And they're putting up deer fences, like Owen did down in the Berry Peninsula, to prevent the deers getting in and not giving the chances a chance, not giving the trees a chance to live. So that's all happening there in Tiknock. And it was mad to see what I'd read in the book there on those information boards. So it's happening around the country and particularly there in Tiknock. So Áine, thanks for that, RayRT.ie. And then Teresa. She signs herself off as an air fryer novice in Milltown Pass. I've gotten myself into a bit of a situation and hoped you could help. After hearing lots of talk of air fryers saving money, I convinced my partner we should buy one. I also convinced my son, his partner, and my sister to get them too. They're great things, we hear. The trouble is that all three are still in their boxes because we've no idea what to cook in them. I looked for a few recipes but found nothing beginner level. I remember one of your guests talked about using a few weeks ago. Do you know any recipes or cookbooks? Well, I was introduced to the air fryer by the Daily Dish people, Gina and Carol Daly. And there, I remember they were, I think, the last guests we had in studio before the lockdown. It was a Friday and I think the lockdown happened on the Monday or the Tuesday. Anyway, that cookbook has been a bestseller. It's called The Daily Dish, and then they followed it up with The Daily Dish Rides Again, and they have a plethora of air fryer recipes to choose from. But you can do chips, you can do chicken wings, you can do sausages, although it's not recommended. You can do almost anything you cook in a cooker or an oven. You can do it in an air fryer if it fits. And it does it more efficiently, you don't use as much oil, and it's not as messy, that's what they say. But there's loads of ideas out there, and I'm sure at 51551, we'll get people offering up ideas for air fryers for Teresa, the air fryer novice in Milltown Pass. Because it's not for her, it's for everybody. She feels responsible now that she's encouraged the family to buy air fryers and nobody knows what to do with them. That's mad. We did the lot over the weekend, 1-0. How about you? I was just reading there that the EuroMillions was won in the UK. 171,815,297 pounds and 80 pence. It was the country's third biggest national lottery win. That's in the UK. So that person, whoever it is, we're presuming it's one person, immediately, just with that, like that, became richer than Phil Collins, who's worth 150 million. Adele, richer than Adele, worth 150 million. Chris Martin from Coldplay, he's worth 132 million. Enya, 113 million. Harry Styles, 100 million. And Gary Barlow, 90 million. And that person, just like that, didn't have to release one record, became richer than all of those music people. Harry Styles worth 100 million. That's came as a little bit of a surprise to me. Ireland's biggest EuroMillions win came back in 2005. Is that long ago? 17 years ago. Dolores Reardon. McNamara. Yes, Dolores Reardon is from Limerick, was from Limerick, the lead singer of the Cranberries. Dolores McNamara won a EuroMillions jackpot worth 115 million. Now, this caught our attention as well because we like this sort of stuff. Did you know when you're up in an airplane, right, at 35,000 feet, that your tongue goes partially numb? So you lose about one third of your taste buds. Did you know that? And the microclimate of an airplane is drier than most deserts. And this has an effect on your nose. It's roughly equivalent to stuffing one nostril with toilet paper, right? And also, this sounds mad, but it's in the Financial Times, so it must be true, that the engine noise in a jet, the exposure of background noise of an airplane, it can reach between 80 and 85 decibels. It dulls your sensitivity to salty and sugary flavours while enhancing your perception of the pretentious fifth taste, umami. Right. And the reason I'm telling you all that is it's a scientific nightmare creating food to taste good on airplanes because of all that. So you lose part of your taste buds and you lose part of your smell, which is involved in taste as well. And then the noise is affecting how you taste things as well. Anyway, this explains the enduring love affair between air passengers and tomato juice. Now, I've never had a tomato juice on a flight, but seemingly tomato juice is ordered as much as beer on a flight. If you drink it in the sky, it'll taste richer, more savoury and less acidic. So that's why people go for tomato juice on flights. I always thought they were suffering with hangovers. So there's how I got that wrong. So the next time you're on an airplane, remember what you've heard here, or you can read in the Financial Times, and order a tomato juice and impress the person beside you when they ask, why'd you go for tomato juice? You go, well, a third of my taste buds have just been numbed, and I don't have much smell either. And of course, the noise here is affecting my taste. That's why I'm going for a tomato juice. That'd be pretty impressive if you can remember all that. It's mad what's going on in the aftermath of Queen Elizabeth's funeral. So we a lot of us watched it. I don't know if the 4 billion that they were predicting watched the funeral. But there was hours and hours and hours of footage. Now, what the royal family have said to the BBC and ITV and Sky News is that they have until today, right, to come up with an hour-long compilation of the footage that they have. So 60 minutes from that day, which started very early in the morning and went on till 9 o'clock that night, or at least half seven, when they had the private interment of the Queen. So they've put together a compilation of 60 minutes. The royal family have a veto on that, so they can say, I don't like the way I look in that, or that doesn't represent us in a good light. So there'll be a bit of to-ing and fro-ing. Eventually, they will agree with the BBC, the ITV and Sky News that they have that 60 minutes. And in future, if they want to show clips of Queen Elizabeth II's funeral, they can only go to that 60 minutes. If they want something different, they'll have to seek permission from the royal family. I think that's a bit mad, isn't it? Anyway, that's the way it's happening. And The Guardian, who have carried this today, has previously revealed that the palace vetoed several clips from the Queen's memorial services and banned them from being reused in news reports and social media clips. Royal staff had a WhatsApp group, including senior executives from the BBC, ITV and Sky News, which they used to control which footage could be used. So there, 51551 ray at rte.ie. I'll tell you about our quiz in a moment. Let's see what you're saying on the text. I do sausages in the air fryer and yummy, says that person. And great to hear the Grahams mentioned. They were both amazing GAA fans, and Alice was still driving to Croker in her 90s to follow her beloved Lily White's, God rest her, says Carl. And that's Graham's Bakery, which is just behind the statue. So they'd love the fact that the statue of Willie Gannon was right in front of the old bakery. My granduncle Joe Rafferty, known as the Kildare Gael, played with the team at the time. He captained the team in the 30s. Unfortunately, he was killed off his pushbike in an accident on Main Street in Ace when he was 73, says Helen Jordan. And TikTok has loads of air fryer recipes. Go on, you good thing, says Niall. Best first thing to cook in air fryer, chips or roast spuds. Cook bacon in your air fryer, the fat drains off and you're left with crispy, delicious bacon. I'll never go back, says that person. So there's loads of ideas for our novice air fryer person, whose name is Teresa from Milltown Pass. And they'll keep coming in, Teresa, I can assure you. 51551 ray at rte.ie. Good afternoon. Rosalyn, or could be Rosalyn, and Snap. That was the Armenian entry in this year's Eurovision Song Contest, and is doing very well, I'll have you know, on Spotify and TikTok and things like that. My sister Michelle cooks a sirloin steak in the air fryer, I think for 8 minutes, and says it's the best steak she has ever tasted, says Des in Wexford. Dumplings in the air fryer. It's like being in a restaurant, Ray. I was always afraid of cooking them before. I had a fear of cooking dumplings. There's a name for that. It's a phobic fear of something. Dumpophobia. That's probably something completely different. Now, let's tell you about our quiz. We do it daily, It's our Reel in the Ears quiz. We're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and answer three questions on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And it's time for a road trip around Ireland with the iNewa collection of stunning array of hotels dotted across the country, because they're helping us out again this week and we thank them so much for it. iNewa.ie, iNUA.ie. Excuse me. I don't know why I turned down the music to cough, but there you go. Kick back in Kilkenny's chic Hibernian Hotel. Enjoy some downtime in Dundalk's Fairway Hotel. Taste the magic in the Tullamore Court Hotel and the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan's, one of their hotels, or any of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. There's something for everyone to enjoy, from overnight getaways and spa treatments to elegant afternoon tea or a delicious meal in one of the many restaurants across the iNewa collection. The choice is yours. iNewa.ie. Okay, two people after 4 o'clock. Here is your qualifying question. What do we call the collection of financial measures about to be announced by the government tomorrow? What do we call the collection of financial measures about to be announced by the government tomorrow? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925. And good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, now that book I referred to there earlier on, An Irish Atlantic Rainforest by Owen Dalton. An Irish Atlantic Rainforest. I was just seeing there that 250,000 people in Ireland tuned in to watch Queen Elizabeth's funeral. So that's about what? Works out of 5% of our population. They were predicting that 50% of the world's population were going to watch it. I don't think that will be proven right. Anyway, 5% of the Irish population watched the Queen's funeral. Good afternoon, Dee Laws.
Good afternoon.
Laws, that's an unusual name, is it?
It is. It's an English name. It's my husband's name.
Aha. Right, and you took it from him.
I did.
Right. Now, take us back to the night of August 29th. It was a Monday night.
It was a Monday morning, Sunday night, Monday morning.
And you were home alone.
I was home alone, yes.
Go on. Why were you home alone?
My husband works nights in Capa Hospital.
Right.
So I was home alone. Well, two dogs and two cats were actually in the kitchen, but humans, there was only just me in the house.
Okay. What time did you go to bed at?
I went to bed at 11, and about roughly, I'd say it was between 3 and say half 3, I woke up coughing, and I just coughing and coughing, and I could see a light kind of under my bedroom door. And I opened the door, and there were fire doors, thank God. I opened the door and I could see lots of flames and smoke. So I put my right foot out onto the landing to see could I get downstairs, and I couldn't. It burned my foot, two toes on my right foot. So I closed the door. Thank God there were fire doors. And I closed the door again, and I knew that the house was on fire.
Right.
That I couldn't get out that way.
And
I couldn't go.
And yeah. Had you got your phone?
Nope, no phone. Phone, unfortunately, downstairs in the sitting room.
And do you always leave it downstairs?
No, I don't, actually. I don't. I always have it just charged up beside me in the bedroom. But I didn't bring it up that night.
Why? You forgot it, or...?
I think I just left it downstairs.
Yeah,
it was fully charged. Do you know the way you would just don't think so? Always bring your phone to bed with you guys.
Okay.
And
when you open that door, because we see this in movies, you know, and how it's represented in soaps and all that sort of thing. And it always strikes me that there's this, like, I open up the oven sometimes, it might be at 300 degrees, and your eyes water, and you know, there's this blast of heat. You can feel that your skin is nearly turning a different colour.
Yep.
So was it like all that, or?
Well, I could get, it didn't come in at me, thank God. I don't know why. You know the way you see that, there's a film with, Kurt Russell, and he's in a film called Backdraft,
yes,
the fireman.
Yes, yeah.
It didn't do that. But then again, maybe the bedroom windows were not open,
uh-huh.
So maybe that's why there wasn't a backdraft because of that. But I opened the fire door, and all I just saw was like a ring of fire on the ground. There was just flames everywhere and smoke everywhere. So I did engulf some of that. When I went to step out onto the landing with my right foot, and it burnt.
Yeah.
The carpet, everything was on fire. So I stepped back in and I closed the door. I knew I had fire doors, so I knew that they would help me a bit.
Mm.
So I slammed the door closed, and now I did get a gulf of smoke, and I went straight to, I have two bedroom windows. I have a bay window, and then I have a small bedroom window. So I went to the small bedroom. It's like where there's a dressing area there.
Mm.
And I went to that window and I opened that window, and I tried to get some air into myself. My eyes were, I didn't know at the time, but they were bloodshot when they told me in the ambulance.
Yeah.
And my throat, I could barely talk. So I got some fresh air in, and I stood in the room. It seemed like forever, but...
What was going through your head?
Well, to be honest, what was going through my head was there was not an option of getting down the stairs or up the stairs. I could have went out. I have Velux windows at the top of the stairs, four Velux windows. There's another bedroom upstairs, and I just thought, no. If that carpet is all burnt there, I'm not going to get upstairs and get out that way onto the Velux windows. I'm not afraid of heights. Mm. So I said, right, I knew my bay window, underneath my bay window, there's a bench, a seating bench. And I knew if I'd jumped down there, I would have either went through the bench or bounced off the bench, God knows where. So I decided then to climb out the small window. And I was sitting on the windowsill and trying to look through my eyes, which were all bloodshot. And I was told it was 3:30 in the morning, so it was dark. Mm. I didn't see anybody. I didn't hear anybody. I didn't see any cars going. I was all croaky. I didn't call for help. No, I didn't. I could hear glass cracking. So I didn't know where it was cracking in the room. I could hear glass breaking. So then I thought, if the fire gets into the room and then that window is open, like the backdraft, the film.
Yes.
Then I thought, right, it's going to push me out and then I won't have a choice which way to go, really. So I decided, it seemed like a long time. So I decided then to turn myself around on the windowsill and lower myself down.
Uh-huh.
It's red brick, so I got my toes in between the bricks and I fed my toes down the wall like, I don't know, Spider Woman or whatever you want to call
it. So you're holding on to the inside of the window. Yeah,
No, I was holding on to the windowsill.
Just the windowsill. Okay.
Just the windowsill, right. It was grainy kind of windowsill.
Right.
So I turned myself around and I got my toes in. I was working my feet down. Yeah.
So then at this stage, you were thinking, if I'm going to jump, that let's make it the shorter distance, the shortest distance possible. And it's a detached house. You were on the first floor.
Yes.
You probably know now because people have talked to you about this, but how far were your feet then from...
I think about 10 foot.
Right. And the front of the house, was it a lawn or what was it?
Concrete.
Oh, my word.
And I was barefooted. Yeah.
Okay.
I had no slippers, nothing. I didn't even get time to think about throwing out pillows or nothing like that.
That would have been a great idea, wouldn't it?
It would have been a fantastic. And my car was down below. I did think about jumping on the back of my car. My car was reversed in because it's kind of a hybrid, so it was plugged in.
Yeah.
And I was contemplating jumping on the back of the car.
Right.
But then it's aerodynamic, the car that I have, and I would have slid off and then I could have hit my head. So I thought the best option would be to turn around and try and work my way down and get myself as long as I can and then jump from there. And that's what I decided to do.
Whew.
I know.
Like, it took an awful lot of presence of mind.
It did. It did.
And
I'm very quick.
You didn't scream or anything?
No. I just took it upon myself that I said, I'm not dying in this room tonight. This is not where I'm going to die. I am going to get out. I have too much to live for. I've got 9 grandchildren. I've got 4 daughters. I am getting out of here. I am living. I'm not dying in this room.
And did you think like that?
Yes, I swear to God.
That's your thoughts.
Yes.
And you went through all your children, all your grandchildren in your head, probably pictured them.
Yeah.
I probably thought
about my mother-in-law last, but I did think of everybody else. I thought about my girls and my grandchildren. Yes.
Right.
I had to get out. I had to live. I had to live for them. That's what I thought. I'm not going to die in this room. I thought it was in the middle. I didn't know what time it was. It was dark. And I said, I'm not dying here tonight. That's why I keep on saying tonight, because I didn't know it was in the morning.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Well, it's night, yeah.
It was in the middle of the night.
Yeah, yeah.
So I decided that I was living. I was getting out of that room. And the only way out was down that way. And the best way that I could get myself out with less... damages would be that way.
Okay, now, did you, like, you're hanging on with your hands, so that you're going to fall eventually, anyway, at this stage. So was there a point where you pushed yourself back off, away from the house, to land?
No. I just went down.
You just went down, right?
I just went down, yeah. I just went down and my left foot, the heel is smashed. That had to be all rebuilt. The surgeon, Dr. Khan in Drogheda, put me back together, thank God, bless him. And I just kept my elbows in, and I just went. I just let go and took my elbows in and just jumped.
Right.
And I didn't hit my car. Thank God, I didn't hit my head off my car. I don't know how.
And did you bend your knee? Can you remember any of that?
No, you didn't.
Straight legs, yeah. So.
Straight legs, yeah. Because I was hanging that way. I'd say it was 10 to 12 feet, roughly. When I looked up and I was outside of my house, and I'd say roughly, because I'm only 5'6".
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't be a tall woman.
That's average height for a woman. Yeah.
So I knew. I just kept my elbows in. Then when I let go, I just got my elbows in. I wasn't thinking about my feet. And I felt my legs hit the ground. It felt like it went right up inside of me. I felt a pain that went right up in under my chest. I thought my back,
yes.
I thought my ribs. I really thought everything was gone. Then I have to say, then I was like, oh my God, that's all I kept saying. God help me. That's all I kept on saying on the ground. Please, God help me. That's all I kept saying.
And did it cross your mind that you were alive?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So yes. There was the pain, and yet I'm alive.
Oh, God, yeah.
So double-edged sword. Have you
ever
experienced pain like that before? Is it comparable to anything?
No, never in my life. No, that went right up through my body. I never felt anything like that in my life. I thought my back was gone. I knew I was okay. But I really thought my back was gone, or maybe my ribs, or it just it literally went from my feet right up in under my chest. It was very, and then, oh boy, did I feel the pain then.
Did you scream?
I just was there by myself. No, I don't think I actually screamed. I just was like, oh my God, please God, let me be okay. Please God, let me be okay. Please God. That's all I kept saying was, please God, let me be okay. I was in enough, and I didn't scream for help, but the smoke alarm was going off, the house alarm was going off, the dogs were barking, I could hear the dogs barking.
Did they survive
everything.
It? Did the dogs survive it?
They did.
Oh,
what
great.
Happened was Kerry and Stephen came in from next door, who, when you look at my house, they live on the left side, hand side of me, my house is detached, and Kerry was in, and she found me on the doorstep. And she said, Dee, are you okay? And I said, the house is on fire, Kerry. And she says, are the dogs inside? And I said, yeah, they mind the dogs for us when we're away on holidays. Mm. And she got the key. She, because it's in the box at the side of the house, they're regularly looking after the house for us and that, you know. And so she ran in and she opened the kitchen door and ran out because she could see all the flames then, and ran out and called the dogs, and the dogs and the two cats came out.
Oh, great.
Everybody was okay, thank God.
Yeah. So they came out, and then somebody obviously rang the fire brigade.
Kerry's husband, okay. Stephen, he rang the fire brigade and the ambulance, and well, I don't know what way it went after that. I just know everybody was there. The guards were there, the ambulance were there, the fire brigade was there, and they rang my husband because he was working in Keppel Hospital at the time. And they rang my husband, and so, of course, he was on pursuit. He was on his way home. He was got in the car and back to the house. And then Jonathan and Claire came out from beside me, another side of me. And then Lisa and Paul and their son, Tony, they came legging it across the road seemingly. And Tony, young Tony, got cutter for steel, I don't know what you call it, snips or something, and he knocked off the gas.
Aha.
And
that was
quick
thinking, wasn't it?
Quick thinking, Tony, young Tony, that was Lisa's lad.
Yeah.
And
were you? I'm trying to get inside your head.
Yeah.
Was the pain so bad that you couldn't appreciate what was going on? Well, I suppose the question is
absolutely not.
Could you appreciate that your house, and I know you're very house proud and, you know, you've done a lot of work on it over the years. Could you appreciate now that this was going up in flames? Was that?
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't a concern.
No, definitely not. Right. I knew there was nobody else in the house except me. I just said to Kerry, the cats and dogs are in the kitchen. And she went and got them out. And then they lifted me up to try and get me over to Lisa's house, to get me away from the house in case, you know, in case the windows blew out or whatever. Because then the ambulance, then there was Trevor from the ambulance from Navan. And there was a girl called Shirley and another girl, ambulance person, paramedic, called Claire. They got me into the ambulance, and Jerry, who I work with, he's Mead Fire. Jerry Carey, he came into the ambulance and he said to me, "Dee, you had 2 minutes to get out of that room."
Wow.
It was actually coming the hot press where it started. There was my ensuite is adjacent to it.
Right.
And it was actually coming into the bathroom, and that door, which is a fire door, would have been open with a kind of like...
Two minutes, Ray.
It's
nearly a month now.
Yeah.
And you've obviously thought about it long and hard. So you were that close to death, Dee?
I was.
So has it changed your view of the world, of
life? Absolutely. I knew in that room I had to get out.
Yeah.
That was not a question, especially when my foot burned. I knew I'm in trouble here. I knew I had to get out. I didn't know how long I had, but I knew I didn't have long. And I knew I had to get out of that bedroom because I wanted to live.
Yeah.
Because I have my children, my grandchildren, my husband, of course. Forgot to mention him earlier.
You didn't know you mentioned him. You did, Alan. Yeah.
I did.
So the house is...
From the second floor up to the third floor. It's sort of like a three-story house.
Yeah.
And so it's completely destroyed.
And where are you living at the moment?
I'm staying in Angela and Declan Murta's house here in Navan. They're very good friends of ours. They're on holidays in Spain.
Okay.
And they have graciously given their house until the 12th of October and longer if need be.
And was your house insured?
Yes, thank God.
And you mentioned the hot press there. So they reckon, they haven't written the report yet, but they reckon initial findings say that the origins of it were in the hot press. And I see that Dublin Fire Brigade issued only last week, I think.
Yes.
An urgent warning not to overpack hot presses after rushing to a fire earlier in the week. They said that hot press can contain electrics and water in a warm environment, so it's important to use them properly so they don't become a hazard. So
don't overpack them, basically. Yes, absolutely.
So what have you learned from all this, Dee Laws in Navan?
Well, is basically
you're stronger than and you're stronger than you thought. Like, to have the presence of mind to do that, you're a hero. But you are.
But you know what? If I'm a hero and if I save by my story and what happened to me on that night 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I'm glad to be alive.
Okay. Fire doors are hugely important.
Fire doors.
Yeah, make sure you have fire doors.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Jonathan next door, he came, one of the days I went to see my house, and he came in and he said, "Dee, I've looked up Amazon. They have them for, I think it's 50 or 55 euros in Amazon. They're a rope ladder that you can throw out your window and get yourself down."
Right.
So we had a full house there about 2 weeks previous to this. My daughter was home from New Zealand and the house was packed. All five bedrooms were being occupied.
That could have been a different story, a completely different story.
Absolutely.
How is your foot?
It's on the mend. It's going to take a bit of time, but it's on the mend. But I have the doctor, Dr. Khan, in Drogheda, amazing man.
Right.
Is absolutely amazing man. It's just going to take time. I can't lean on, I can't put any weight on it now for another, say, roughly 4 weeks.
Okay.
And then hopefully then I'll be given a boot and then hopefully be able to get walking again. But please, people, be careful. Have your fire rescue plan in place.
Right.
In your homes.
D-Laws, I was there with you. My heart rate has increased. It's great to be able to talk to you. And I mean that because it could have been quite different, couldn't it?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Mind yourself, D.
Thank you so much, Ray.
Okay,
thank you.
See you.
And all the listeners. Take care. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, UNICEF Youth Advocate Rory Holohan from Termonfeckin in County Louth spoke last week in New York at the UN Secretary General's Transforming Education Summit, TES. As part of Rory's address to the Assembly, Rory spoke of the importance of mental health in quality education, speaking of the global inequalities when it comes to supports for mental health. Rory joins us now in studio. Good afternoon, Rory.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Termonfeckin. Let's talk about the name first, very briefly. Is that an affliction of a name, Termonfeckin?
Oh, no, it has a great history, actually. But, do you know, we use it to our us, I don't know what you call us, Termonfeckers, Termonfeckiners. we use it to our advantage. So yeah. In our marketing, we had Win a Feckin House, which got...
Very good.
And then we had Fine Feckin Foods. So it works quite well.
So you're a Termonfecker.
Yes.
A Termonfecker, right. Listen, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Firstly, on being invited to address... this summit and then to go and do it. How did you end up being invited in the first place?
So I actually started off with transition year doing work experience with UNICEF. It just goes to show how far work experience can take you. So I did an human rights and activism training course in UNICEF, and then I had the opportunity, we all had the opportunity to bring forward an issue that we were passionate about, and I was selected to speak to the Taoiseach on World Children's Day about reforming the Relationships and Sexuality Education Programme. And with that, I did a piece with RTE, with Philip Bramwell, on my experiences of homophobia, but how I am pushing for respect for all.
Okay.
So through that then, my story was shared to the EU summit in a bid to tackle anti-LGBT law in Hungary. So after that, I was appointed as a global UNICEF youth advocate, and that's how I got to UN.
So, this is global now, but it comes from your own personal experience, doesn't it?
Yes.
It starts there.
Yeah.
And a lot of the best advocates in the world are speaking because of their lived experience, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Yes. So you discovered you were gay or came out as gay when you were 13, and then you decided that you would speak on behalf of your community.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that
it?
Yes. Yeah. And was that difficult?
I don't actually think it was difficult, to be honest. It was just me speaking, like I was sharing my experience. And I think afterwards I realised, wow, I did that. You know, it just kind of happened, I suppose.
Yes.
But... yeah, no, it wasn't difficult because I was speaking not only for a community, but I was speaking for myself. So that was,
yes,
as long as I had that on mind, that was fine.
And I suppose in your head, you're not thinking, I'm an advocate. You're just thinking, I'm Rory.
Yeah. I'm Rory. Yes. To my friends, I'm Rory. I'm Paddy and Patricia's son, you know.
Yes, yeah,
I don't
yeah.
see myself as this youth advocate, you know.
Yeah. And does the weight of that label then, does that sit comfortably on your shoulders that you now are an advocate?
Well, to be honest, I think I wear it with a bit of pride at times.
Yes.
You know, I think, wow, I did that. You know, it's great to... It allows me to take a step back and realise, wow, I did that. I have done so much work. Whereas without that, I'd be kind of thinking, what's next? But recently I've been kind of thinking, I'm just going to take everything as it comes. I'm not thinking what comes after that. I'm just... taking every experience and living it, which is important.
Well, let's talk about last week then, Transforming Education Summit, and your emphasis was on mental health.
Yes.
And specifically how the education system fits into informing young people about their mental health.
Indeed, yeah.
So where do you think it fits in?
So, as of now, the mental health, well-being in general in Ireland, it's kind of taught in around when you're 12 or 13, from my personal experience, around 12 or 13, these book definitions were forced onto teenagers, and we never actually got a chance to understand what they are. There wasn't this proper understanding. There was a 3-line definition of what mental health is, what anxiety is, and where you can call or talk to a trusted adult. That's great, but it's not enough. You need to be talking about this issue from a younger age. You need to be addressing it from the ages of 4 or 5. And I'm not saying talk about scary labels to kids to try and scare them, but you need to talk about emotions and what it means to be happy, what it means to be sad, but also the sheer importance of feeling sad. Because in this world of toxic positivity, we're expected to suddenly feel happy once we've addressed our emotions. That's not the case. We need to feel
Hold on. That's a first on me now. Toxic positivity.
Yes. It's this concept in society that we are to constantly be happy. And it's greatly portrayed in the movie Inside Out by Disney. It is where once you feel sad, once you address your issue, you are constantly fighting to be happy again and to stay happy. That is really unhealthy and damaging to young people, but also to adults. And it's especially enhanced through social media that we are expected to always live this happy life and how to constantly be peaking. You need to have when you have a high, you need to have a low. And that's just the way life is.
Yeah.
So it is so important to feel sad. It's not great to feel sad, but you shouldn't be trying to escape that feeling. You should be talking about it, but not expecting suddenly after speaking to feel happy again. You should naturally go back to feeling fine. And
it's
feeling
part
happy.
Of the human condition.
100%, yeah.
Yeah. And of course, if you're constantly striving to be happy and you don't achieve that, you're doubly disappointed.
Oh.
Because you haven't achieved your goal and you're not happy.
And you feel uncomfortable. You feel weird that, personally, I'm thinking, why am I feeling sad for a total of 40 minutes in a day or 2 hours in a day? But I'm not thinking about how I'm happy for 22 hours or 23 hours, you know?
Okay. Social media then, and the smartphone, and this phrase that people are using over and over again, compare and despair. Because you are looking at a perfectly curated version of other people's lives, which it's impossible for you to match. So that leads some people to despair because they feel, I can't lead that life. They have it, I don't have it.
Yeah. Well, it's impossible to meet that because it's not true.
Yes.
It's all false.
I know you know that and I know that.
Yeah.
But a lot of people who are looking at it don't.
Yeah. I know that speaking to you right now, but if I'm to go on my phone in 5 minutes and scroll through Instagram or Snapchat or TikTok, I won't be thinking that. I'm only thinking that from an outsider's perspective. But when you have something right on your screen, how are you supposed to know that? How are you supposed to constantly go, oh no, that's just an idea. It's a fixated idea, you know?
So how does your generation deal with that then? How do you protect yourselves from that compare and despair?
I think knowing when to stop looking at social media and actually taking a break, because you can choose what to follow on Instagram and or Snapchat or TikTok. You can choose what content you want to see, but there is so many different algorithms in place that you can't actually control a lot of it. You can control a certain amount, but you might see something. You can choose not to see it again, but you'll still see it. So I think actually taking a break, seeing friends, taking a digital detox, I suppose.
Do you know there are very bright people and their job is to design algorithms to make sure that your eyes stay on that screen as long as possible?
Yes.
That's their job.
Yeah.
In a way, they're sort of contriving addiction on behalf of young people.
Oh, 100%.
That's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it's frightening. It's very scary that people's jobs, it's not to see how someone is feeling, but instead how to keep them on the screens, how to keep them watching, have them watching for long enough that ads come in so money is being made.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how then, you had the ears of some really influential people last week in New York. How do we make them do something about it?
Keep young people involved. I think that is the key component. You need to have young people involved. I was invited amongst 29 other youth advocates from around the world, and we discussed the importance of discussing mental health, climate change, and all education for all in school. And I had the opportunity to speak alongside and meet the Queen, Her Majesty the Queen of Spain, and I got to meet the Taoiseach. I was so privileged to actually meet him because he had 30 meetings that day, but he took out 5 minutes just to speak to me, which was absolutely lovely.
What did you say to him?
It was just a very conversational chat, talking, because we had met before over Zoom in 2020, as I previously said, but this was just a nice conversational chat. It wasn't, there were no motives or anything in place. It was just, hello, how are you, and all that.
Do you think that the tech companies have far too much power?
Yes, but it can be used for good. It can be used for good. And there are certain companies who are working, like Google, for example. They are working on how they can use their power to bypass what a a country can do and what a government can do, as a government has one state. It has their state for most cases. And you have these...
They're global. These are global. And so we need a global solution.
They can advocate to people all around the world. Yes. And when working with organisations like UNICEF or UNESCO, great things can be done, but it's just important to make sure that everyone is there and doing it for the young people or doing it for...
Unfortunately, Google are in it for profit, primarily. Everything else comes second to that.
I think it's very... It depends on the actual organisations. I know that Google does great work, but it's down to... Like, you're totally right. These multinational companies...
That's not a slur on them. That's what they're there for. They're
there to make profit. That's totally true. But it is a secondary thing as well. And I think you have to wonder, why is all this money being given to multinational... Or to organisations or... to the sake of others, what is in it for others? Because we have to always ask that, you know, what is in it for the other party? But it has been seen that work is being done and we do care about others.
And it's good to see that Meta, for example, have been fined $405 million for allowing young people to put information about themselves up and it becomes public. So that's heartening. What's your ambition, Rory? You're doing your Leaving Cert this year.
Yes, so I'm in sixth year and I'm hoping to study law, and it's just a matter of law and what in college. I'm hoping to perhaps study law and business or law and economics or maybe law and politics. So afterwards, I hope to take my advocacy to another level and not only be a public youth advocate, but also be a legal advocate and hopefully one day be able to practice alongside, as a barrister, sorry, and hopefully one day practice alongside my mother, who is a solicitor. So be nice.
So some sort of human rights
lawyer. 100%, yeah.
Alma, what's her name? Alma, isn't it George Clooney's wife? She's a human rights
lawyer. She is indeed, yes.
Lawyer, yes, yeah. And politics?
Yes, well, I hope to eventually delve into politics and see where that takes me. I want to keep up the advocacy as well as becoming a barrister, but I do not want to stop advocating. And as long as it keeps me happy and healthy, I'm happy to keep going. So.
Great to meet you, and congratulations again on going to New York and speaking in front of TES, the Transforming Education Summit, and good luck in the Leaving Cert.
Thank you very much.
Studying going well?
Oh yes, a lot of catch up though from the most week.
Thanks, Rory. Yeah, thank you very much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gramaga Keon, thank you very much. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Be concerned there over D's dogs and cats. We were talking to her, we did ask her about them in the end and they got out safely, which is good news. On the air fryer, you can do strip line steak in an air fryer, cook temperature 180, about 50 minutes, and they're so tender. I have one and I do so much in it. They are fantastic, says Ruth on the air fryer. I love my air fryer. I cook burgers, sausages, toasted sandwiches done in 2 minutes, and I've done a whole chicken and roasties in it. Lots of recipes online, says Paula. And thanks for your wonderful guest. So relevant, not just for young people, but for all age groups. He makes so much sense. Best wishes to him, says Siobhan on Rory there. And I'm sure we'll be hearing more about Rory in the future. Right now, it's time for our quiz. Two quizzers standing by, and we have a prize. And this week, it's any one of the I Knew A Collection hotels, and they have them all over the place. There's the Hibernian Hotel in Kilkenny, the Dundalk Fairways Hotel, the Tullamore Court Hotel, the Hillgrove Hotel in Monaghan, and any of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. iNewA.ie, something for everyone to enjoy. iNewA.ie. Hello, Elaine O'Connell.
Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Good. How was your weekend?
Yeah, I had a good weekend now. I was at a wedding on Friday and just, you know, relaxing and things over the weekend. Met up with friends and things. So yeah,
do you want to mention the people who got married or not?
Yeah, I'm sure they'd only be delighted. So yeah, congratulations to Sean and Joanne. Yeah.
Yeah. And where was the wedding?
So it was in Ardfert Church and then the Ballingarry in Tralee.
Aha, Ardfert. Lovely Ardfert.
Yeah, beautiful part of the country. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that part. I love that part of the country. Are you from down that way?
So I'm originally from Cork, but I'm living in Beaufort now near Killarney, yeah.
Aha, right. And you're a nurse and you're starting a new job and you're just taking a little bit of a break.
that's it, a little siesta.
Nice to be able to do that, isn't it? Yeah.
Ah, yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's nice just to recharge the batteries and refresh the new job. Yeah. Great.
And you're an air fryer owner?
I am, and I'm a big champion of air fryers.
Are you?
A great job. Yeah, I use my air fryer more than I use my oven. It's like one of the best investments I made. My only regret is that I have a one drawer. If I go for two drawer.
Yeah. So you could do the steak and the chips at the same time.
100%, yeah.
100%. And you do steak in it?
I do, yeah, 100%. Like that lady Ruth said, 15 minutes at 180, the roast function, and beautiful, so nice.
And what does it come out brown? And
It comes out like well done.
Yeah.
That's the way I'd like it.
Oh, that's the way you like it. No, because you know the way you sear a steak, and that's on the pan, so it can be brown outside and pink inside. But you want it brown the whole way through.
I want it the whole way through. But like that, one of my friends does it and gets it out medium rare. I think she does it for 11 minutes.
Right, okay.
So, like, you know, you can do it to your own taste, like, with your free.
Right, and one of your friends boils eggs in it. I'll go on.
Yeah. She does.
You
can do everything in it. Broccoli, you roast potatoes, you name it, right? Mine came with a book, and you can even tell you that you can make, like, bake in it. So there's a bake function. I've not done any baking yet, it's something I must try.
Right, you better give out your address there so Air Fryer can send you a new one there with two drawers. Yeah. Go on. You're up against Jackie Connolly from Cork City. How are you doing, Jackie?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I feel a cough coming on, but I'll turn off the microphone this time if I need to cough. So you're in Cork. What are you up to?
I'm at home today. I just came home from work, and I am with my daughter, Katie.
Yes.
They're eating popcorn and delighted with herself.
Brilliant. And she's going to choir practice later on.
I'm going to choir practice later on, yeah.
Right.
I'm going to use this for the choir. And that'll be good fun.
Yeah. And what are you rehearsing at the moment? Any particular song?
We are rehearsing. Oh my God, I can't remember.
Sing it, and I'll see if I can.
No, you know what now? I'm an alto, so we never, ever get the ordinary line. We always go, oh.
Oh, you're just doing backing vocals. Right, alto,
no,
right.
No, you're doing all.
You just do the awe and see if I can identify it. Go on, let's have a bit of crack.
Okay, listen.
You see, Niamh, who's producing today, is in a choir, so she might be able to spot it. Do you give it one more blast there?
Wait, Darcy, are you messing with me?
She's saying crash test dummies. No, she's a chancer.
Yeah.
Okay, so you haven't succumbed to the air fryer hype yet.
No, I haven't. To be honest, we don't have one. We have an oven, and that's it.
Yeah. I think it's the convenience, and particularly if you're, you know, if you're cooking for yourself or just two, it's handy.
I have a husband as well. So there's three of us.
There's three. You see, there you go. Right. Okay. Have we got Elaine back up? We're just getting Elaine back up there. She dropped out. Elaine, you're there. You're there. Yes, we're all present and accounted for. So I can tell you both that three questions each. If you go for a long clip, you get a point. Go for a shorter clip, you get 2 points. Whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. And if it's a draw on points, we go to a tie break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Thank you.
Elaine. It's 1987, Elaine, and we're starting at the cinema. Would you like a long clip or a short clip?
For the cinema, I'll go for a long clip.
Long clip. Can you name this police action movie where a policeman from Detroit was back in a very rich part of California for this sequel?
Hey, man, take off your glasses. I thought that was you, man. You almost got busted. I did get busted. I lost my whole investment because of you.
Now, that was the short one, so I have to give you the long one. Hold on. Here we go. There you go. Yeah.
Hey, man, take off your glasses. I thought that was you, man. You almost got busted. I did get busted. I lost my whole investment because of you. Vinny, what the hell is wrong with you, man? You know I'm a businessman. I got to work.
What?
You come inside here half hour late, and on top of all that, you're going to bring the goddamn cop with you, too?
What are you talking, cop? He ain't no cop.
That's Dirty Harry himself.
Now, there's the long clip. For a point, what's the name of the movie?
Would it be Police Academy 2?
No. That was Eddie Murphy, and that was Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Yeah.
Okay,
no.
Rightio. Early days. Yeah. Now, to you, Jackie, 1987 at the cinema. Do you want to go long or short?
I'll go long.
Long, okay. This star-laden film was about the authorities taking on gangsters in Prohibition America in the 1930s. Here's your long clip.
Get Capone. Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way. Everybody knows where the booze is.
Somebody messes with me, I'm going to mess with him.
And it is.
Not
a clue. No. It was The Untouchables, starring Kevin Costner, Sean Connery and Robert De Niro. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So no points on the board. We're on to question two. Elaine, it's music from 1987. Long or short?
Yeah, I'll try short for it.
You'll try short. Okay. Can you name the band or the song? It was a huge dance mix hit from 1987. To beat the intro.
I honestly have no idea. I can't even think of Duran Duran. I'm trying to think of something.
No, it's not Duran Duran. It's a band called Mars and Pump Up the Volume. Pump Up the Volume.
Never even
okay.
Heard of me.
Right. Jackie, music from 1987.
I take a long one.
A long one, okay. Can you name this chart hit by two sisters from 1987? It's an occupation. Now,
take a break it and relieve it or something.
Yeah, go on, go on. You're there. You're there.
Take a break it and relieve it. I don't know.
No.
That's all I know.
Two sisters. Any guess on the name of the band, even group?
The Pointer Sisters.
No, and they were sisters.
No.
Mel and Kim, and Respectable. Okay. They're difficult today. They're difficult for a Monday. So we're on question three. No points on the board yet. So this one's going to sort it out. Elaine, it's news and current affairs. So do you want to go long or short?
I'll go long. Since I've been so unlucky all along, we'll go long.
Now, the only thing I'll say to you is if you go long, that gives Jackie an opening. Even if you get it right, she can go short and get it right. But you're going to go long then.
So I'll go short.
Yeah, exactly. Which cartoon characters who go on to become world superstars and have their own series made their first appearance on the Tracy Ullman Show in 1987? Here's your short clip as a clue.
Well, good night, son.
Dad?
Yeah?
What is the mind? Is it just a system of impulses or is it something tangible?
So, cartoon.
Would it be The Simpsons?
Yes, sounding different, but it was The Simpsons. As they appeared on The Tracy Ullman Show, sounding different, you get 2 points for that. Now, look at us. Jackie, that puts under pressure. So, you have to go short as well. And if you go short and get it right, we're on a tie break situation. Okay. Are you going to go short?
Here we go, I'm so.
Yes. Can you name this US president who made a famous speech in Berlin in 1987? Here's your short clip.
If you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate.
Who's that?
Is it Ronald Reagan?
It is Ronald Reagan at the Brandenburg Gate in West Germany in 1987. 2 points for you as well. It's a draw! Which is fair enough, I think. It's fair enough, but it brings us to a tie-break question. We asked you this question before you went on air. I'm now going to repeat it for our listeners at home. Whoever answers closest to the correct answer is today's winner. Good luck to you both. Here we go. So according to Google Maps, how long would it take you to travel by car from Cork Harbour to Dublin Harbour? The two harbours. Elaine, your guess was?
I said 2 hours and 45 minutes, right?
Okay, it's 282 kilometres via the M8 and the M7. And your guess, Jackie?
3.5 hours.
Okay. The correct answer is 2 hours and 57 minutes. It's very close. Oh, but Elaine, you're today's winner. Sorry about that, Jackie.
Well done, Elaine. Well done. At least it was a Cork woman.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Jackie, lovely talking to you.
Lovely talking to you. Lovely too. Thank you very much, Ray.
Yeah,
lovely talk.
And good luck with the choir tonight. And we're going to send you out a couple of Ray D'Arcy Show mugs. One for you and one for Katie.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. You're very good.
See you, Jackie. Take care now. Bye-bye. Elaine O'Connell, well done.
Thank you.
Congratulations. It wasn't a high-scoring quiz, but you were the winner. And you can now go to inewa.ie and decide which of the Inewa Collection hotels you're going to stay in, because they're all over the country.
I tell you, and my mother always telling me that watching The Simpsons at 6 o'clock in the evening after school wasn't going to get me anywhere.
There you go. It's getting you a two-night stay in a Inewa Collection hotel. Well done, Elaine. Great talking to you. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Bye now. Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Conor Pope, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Ray. How are you? How are you getting on?
Good to talk to you. Now, it's a difficult one for you, isn't it? Because as a journalist, you're obviously interested in what's happening tomorrow. But for most people, it's a day of reckoning, isn't it? Because they tune in to find out and they read the papers to find out how it's going to affect their finances.
Absolutely. And it's a funny time because I've been covering budgets for like a long, long time, both before I was doing Price Watch when I was working on the Irish Times website and then doing Price Watch and in my role as the consumer affairs correspondent. And this is a budget the like of which I've never seen before, because it's a budget that's going to be effectively a giveaway budget, when people will be saying, well, how much is in it for me? How much am I going to be better off as a result of the budget? But at the end of the day, we're all going to go to bed tomorrow night still considerably worse off than we were as a result of the cost of living spiral. Mm. So, like, I was looking back at budgets of times past, and I'm just talking about the budgets of the crisis period from 2008, 2009, for about 3 or 4 years, when the IMF and the Troika were in town, and they were savage. I mean, like, it's hard now to remember just how bad they were. So by contrast, this budget is going to be pretty much a giveaway budget with billions of euro poured back into the economy and hopefully poured back into our pockets. But given the scale of the problem that we're all facing, it's just not going to be enough no matter what happens.
Yeah. You do an A to Z of Budget Day in the paper today. Just a couple of things. Budget itself, where does the word come from?
It comes from an old Middle English word which was borrowed from the French. Budget, I'm going to try and pronounce it. Don't know if that's actually how it's pronounced, but it's actually an old Middle English word, which means a small leather satchel. And weirdly enough, the first time it was used in a financial context was in 1733, when an illustration was carried of a cartoon of the then British Prime Minister, Robert Walpole, and he was also the Chancellor of the Exchequer, under the something about Robert Walpole opens his budget. And which doesn't sound like a particularly funny caption to me, I'm not going to lie to you, but maybe it was of its time. But anyway, and then budget became inextricably linked to the British financial statement that's published every year. And of course, we piggybacked on a lot of the stuff that was, we borrowed a lot of stuff from the UK system after independence. So that's why we still use the term budget.
And in the lead up to the budget, was it always the case that there'd be kite flying and leaks and all that sort of thing? Or was it different back in the day?
God, it couldn't have been more different. In the 1940s, a British Chancellor of the Exchequer, whose name completely escapes me, had to resign because he inadvertently told a journalist one element of his budget that then appears in the evening papers in Britain an hour before he gave his speech, and he was forced out of office. And then I remember coming back closer to home in this country in, you know, maybe 15, 18 years ago, the Herald was effectively given a copy of the budget ahead of the minister, Charlie McGreevy, reading it out. And there was ructions. Over the last 10 years, there's been so many leaks and kite-flying exercises in the run-up to the budget that pretty much everybody knows exactly what's going to happen. And there's a reason for that. Well, the reason probably goes back to 1982. Now, some of your listeners may remember 1982 was the infamous year when John Bruton unveiled his budget and he announced that there was going to be VAT on children's shoes. The country went wild. Everyone was furious. It caused two independent TDs that were supporting the government to pull their support. The government collapsed. And as a result, that that budget entered infamy. I don't think that would have happened had John Bruton and his team had the capacity to fly a few kites in advance and say, lads, we're thinking of putting a VAT on children's shoes, and everyone would have gone, that's a terrible idea, don't do that. And of course, that's why I think they kite fly, because it would save them a lot of grief in the long run.
Mm. I was watching the news yesterday evening, and they were saying that the three leaders and Pascal Donoghue and Michael McGrath were in talks last night, and the lady, I can't remember her name, said that some of the plans would actually happen today. It struck me as, for a thing that's so important and it only comes around once a year, that to be still putting the final touches to it a day before it happens struck me as weird.
No, it's the reality of the world, though. I mean, they do put an awful lot of last-ditch talks in, because you have every single department trying to get their bit of the pie.
Right.
And there's an awful lot of tension in the run-up to the budget. So, like, an awful lot of the measures that were agreed yesterday will be announced tomorrow. And that's the nature of it. It really is, a lot of the time, right up to the wire stuff. Now, the big picture stuff, the tax changes and all that, they will have been finalised a long time ago. So it's kind of almost the tweaks, but the tweaks that will make a huge difference to people and a huge difference to departments.
Yeah. And of course, front page news today about free primary school books, which is...
Finally.
Yeah.
And like, we've been talking about that, Ray, for donkey's years, about how important it is and how simple a move it would be to introduce a system whereby primary school children were given access to free books. I mean, and it's not even the money saving, it's the principle behind it. Mm. Because we've been promised a free education for all our children since 1967, when Donal O'Malley was the Minister for Education. And we've been constantly let down. In Northern Ireland, primary school kids don't pay for their books.
No.
So it's just, it was something simple that needed to be done. It has been done. It'll save Irish parents maybe 100, maybe 200 quid a year. It's not a huge amount of cash, but it's certainly better than nothing. And it's a step in the right direction. And I think that's the really key thing, because apart from anything else, it sends a message to the people in power that education is important and it needs to be properly funded.
It's only costing the government 47 million. Which sounds like a lot, but it's not a lot in the scheme of things. So why hasn't it been done before now? Anyway, been done, that's it.
No, but actually it is worth making that point, because Barnardo's are constantly banging this drum, and they've pointed out that you could make education genuinely free for all primary school kids by spending less than 100 million euros.
Yeah.
And I've always struggled to understand, why don't they just do it? Because it would be, and it will be, an incredibly popular move for so many people.
Yeah. Okay, so that's it. We've looked forward to it. You'll report on it, and then there'll be the afters analysis
that's
as
exactly
well. That's
it,
the way it's done now, isn't it? Yeah, the before, the then, and the afters. Okay, this came into pricewatch@rte.ie. Dear Conor, I had a smart meter installation scheduled for later this week, but having heard the news about them and compared the price of electricity with a smart meter versus the price with a regular meter, am I better off sticking with what I have? So well, I've cancelled the appointment. Was I right?
No, well, first off, I'd say I wouldn't cancel, but I think that ship might have sailed. Now, this listener is right. There are serious issues with smart meters and the time of use tariffs that have been imposed. And it has been revealed that a lot of smart meter time of use tariffs are actually dearer than the standard rates that are on offer from companies and the discounted rates that are on offer from companies. So somebody might be looking at it going, well, why would I get sign up to a smart meter time of use tariff when I can get a cheaper tariff somewhere else? And I think in the short term, people need to be looking out for themselves and they need to be looking out for their own finances, and people should be looking to get the cheapest tariff that's available to them, whether or not it's smart meter or whether or not it's a regular meter or whatever it might be. So I can understand why someone might say, well, I'm not going to bother with a smart meter tariff, but ultimately this person could have got the smart meter tariff and stuck with whatever tariff was available from whatever provider they wanted to go with. They weren't compelled to go to a smart meter tariff. So, but that ship has probably sailed. But in terms of the news about the smart meter tariffs, I mean, we're slowly realising that they're maybe not all that we thought they might be. So, for instance, around 1 million smart meters have been installed in homes. Only around 40,000 of them have actually been activated. That means that the customers will have signed up for time of use tariffs. So the rest of them aren't doing all of the things that they could be doing. So that's the first thing. But having said that, they are still important. And they are important because, A, regardless of whether or not you have signed up to the full suite of services that a smart meter tariff can potentially offer you, it still means that all of those estimated bills that we get, the bane of a lot of people's lives, they'd be gone, because the smart meter does serve the function of feeding real-time data to the energy providers, which means that the estimated readings are gone. And it is up to the Commission for the Regulation of Utilities to ascertain why the smart meter tariffs aren't more attractive to people, which would encourage people to use energy in a more timely way and maybe use energy outside of the peak times of between 5 p.m. and 7 p.m. And that way the grid would be under less pressure and ultimately people would be able to save money.
Okay. And just so people understand, so the smart meter is installed by ESB, well, people working on their behalf, but you can still stick with your whoever your energy provider is.
Exactly. So yes, the smart meter feeds the information to the national grid, and the national grid is controlled by the ESB. Now, confusingly, Electric Ireland, which used to be part of the ESB, is now a separate standalone entity, and that sells energy, yes, as does Flowgas, as does Electric, as does Bord Gáis Energy. So it's ESB networks that are that control the smart meters, and they are a good thing. That's the thing. Anything that gives people real-time data on their energy usage is to be welcomed. But I, like, the Commission for the Regulation of Utilities has said that it's in contact with the companies to find out why there isn't better value when it comes to the to those particular tariffs, the smart meter tariffs. And I think until we get those better value tariffs, people will be reluctant to use them. They're even because they don't make financial sense today. And I think that's the really key thing, because everybody is going to be looking out for how they can save money on their energy usage this month, next month, and all the way through the winter. So it's there's no point in looking towards long-term prospects if you can save yourself €5 or €50 or €500. So people are like, I can totally understand why people will look out for themselves in the days and weeks ahead. So if you can save yourself €50 by going to a tariff that's not based on a smart meter, I'm not going to judge anybody for that, because I think that makes most financial sense. And I think we just have to get through the winter months ahead in as economical a way as possible, or else people are going to be in trouble.
Okay. So it's just bad timing, really, because these, strikes me, are teething problems, but they happened at the worst time for energy providers. For a long time, with the way things are.
Well, possibly. I mean, teething problems is a very kind interpretation of it. Okay. I mean, we don't really understand exactly what's at the root of it, and that's why the CRU has said it's going to be carrying out an investigation into it. But, you know, whatever the root cause of it, it needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed by the energy providers and by the CRU to ensure that people are getting the best possible value for money. Because you must remember, Ray, that anybody who is using a smart meter and anybody who is using their energy more judiciously and using it off-peak or, you know, late at night in order to save money should be rewarded for that, and they shouldn't be made to feel like mugs just because the systems aren't in place to treat them fairly.
Okay, Conor, thanks so much. Thank you. That's Conor Pope there. Pricewatch@rte.ie if you want Conor to grapple with any of your consumer issues, and we will talk to Conor again next Monday. That's it from us. Sarah and Cormac are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.